Hey everybody, on this episode of Designated Survivor After Show, we're breaking down Season 1, Episode 6, The Interrogation. In this episode, Tom Kirkman learns the art of compromise. Let's do it.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
There you go. Yes. Getting a little old school with Destiny's Child right here on the Designated Survivor After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. This particular rendition of the song has a sweet little slideshow on YouTube, so it is ridiculous.
It's
seeing
kind of epic.
the image that's going around
here.
It's
one of a kind.
Very much so. Yes. If you can find that on YouTube with the great slideshow, it's well worth the time. Hey, everybody. We'll be breaking down Episode 6 of Season 1, The Interrogation. I am one of your hosts, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie.
Hey everybody, I'm Timothy Michael. You can reach me on Instagram and Twitter at IamTimothyMike.
Hey guys, I'm Renee Ariel. You can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter at Renee Ariel. And check out my blog, CatsLipstickLA.com, and read my new article, Why I'm Single.
Yes, everybody's been talking about it. It's sweeping the interwebs, guys. Get on it. I read it. I actually read it.
I know, I saw your comment.
There you go, yes.
Did you like it?
Sure. Oh. No. Yes.
It's fine. Just break my heart. It's okay. It's whatever, Frank. It's cool.
No, it was very intense. Very entertaining. It gave me an inside look into Renee Ariel's head. So look at that.
That means you should read it.
That's very true. Yes. There you go. So, folks, you can like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Also, hop in the chat right now. Renee's got her computer up and running there. So if you have any thoughts about the series in general or this episode of Specific, you can just hop in the chat and share those thoughts with us. So we're going to break down Episode 6, this hot political landscape right here. How did it feel to be covering this show one day after the elections?
Depressing.
I'm going to say intense, because there was lot of references that were pretty specific to this campaign. Mm-hmm. I was like, did they film this morning?
Yeah.
I'm a little confused. And I don't know if it's even more important because he got elected or because he wouldn't have gotten elected. I don't know where their mind process was at.
That's very true. There was a lot of, as we'll get into this, very much some very similar talking points that are going on right now with our country. Yes.
Yeah.
So we start off the episode as we left it last time. They had finally, Tom Kirkman had executed and successfully completed the mission of capturing Majid Nassar. So they got him.
Finally,
the person that supposedly is responsible for the bombing of the Capitol building. But we also know that Congressman McLeish, he was in on the bombing for whoever may be responsible behind it. They actually had set, was it the secret room for room 50?
105.
Was made into a bunker, reinforced so somebody could survive that explosion. And we know that he was not in his chair at that time. And he was last known inside room 105. So he's in on it. They want to vet him now for a possible vice presidency.
That is stressing me out.
More than the Trump election?
It's a toss-up. Okay. I don't know. Oh my gosh, Jason. I always forget his name, Hannah's boss. When Aaron went up to him, he's like, hey, would you like to do a background check on McLeish? And Jason's like, it's gonna take a while. I'm like, bro, just be like, hey, we're unsure about something about him. It could be a little sketchy. I can't give you all the details, but let me get back to you. Give them some kind of heads up, because Hannah and him are sure now he's involved somehow. Just because they don't know all the details doesn't mean they couldn't give the people a warning, because Aaron went and did the job himself and got info. This is dangerous.
I don't understand why Aaron's taking it so much upon himself to butt into the president's affairs. I mean, I don't know how realistic this whole thing is, but I don't see the chief advisor of the president going above the FBI to do some background checks.
Yeah.
Vice presidential candidate.
There's a lot of actions throughout with Aaron this episode. I was like, man, I feel like, we've kind of like, he's on board with Tom. We kind of dropped the part, like, whose side is he really working for? And then when we start bringing up the McLeish stuff, I'm like, hold on a second. Aaron's motives are seemingly in question with me again.
I'm actually with you on that, because I actually wrote down in the end when Lisa Jordan, the reporter that's like having this little thing with Seth, went up to him at the end and was like, is it true that Leo might not be Tom's son? I was like, who knew? And I was like, brainstorming. I was like, Emily knew, Alex knew, and then Aaron knew. And I was like, well, Emily and Alex wouldn't say anything, so it has to be Aaron. I don't trust him.
Yeah, he's getting a little questionable to me now.
Mm-hmm. Well, for us, it was in the beginning of the season, they made him so shady that it felt too obvious. And then we're like, okay, so he's probably not going to be the bad guy because they made it kind of obvious in the beginning with him getting that document from that mysterious woman outside on the like side the bridge, of the road. Yeah. But then we thought, okay, he's just getting this information as a background check on Tom. He's nothing to worry about. But then this episode, yeah, made me question him again because I also think with just their back and forth with Jason, Aaron's like, I'm going to go. Yep, I'm going to get this info. He's all good, guys. Put him into the vice president position. I don't know.
Well, so we find out that we got so Nasir's in prison, but he hasn't said anything to anybody else. So they are now the big dilemma is one thing that Aaron does mention to Tom while they're in the Oval Office is that hey, you know that we're gonna have this governors, all the governors are coming. You know, have a meeting with them. Make sure when Governor Rivera comes here, give him a special thank you for accepting that plan of Syrian refugees. Huh. You just know that that was gonna come. Come back to bite Tom at some point in the episode.
Of course.
And the one thing I do like is that when the big dinner they're doing to welcome all the governors arrives, and Tom starts making his way, starts introducing himself or thanking everybody for coming, he shakes hands with Governor Rivera and then doesn't say anything about the refugees. I'm like, wait a second, Tom, why didn't you say anything at that moment? He just kept on going.
Oh, because didn't Governor Nichols like interrupt him?
He did the handshake and then walked by him and then ran into Governor
because
Nichols.
Because she was a little butter in her this episode. She was very intense. I was like, girl, calm down. You thirsty. Like, take a drink. Sit down for a second because she was really intense this episode.
I felt like we traded Hook Stratton for Governor Nichols this episode.
I actually missed her this episode. I actually like Hook Stratton.
But I'm tired. Like, there are some scenes that I'm really tired of so far in Designated Survivor, and one of those is the Hook Stratton scene where she comes in and goes, why haven't I been told about this yet, Mr. President? I'm like, brother. Okay. Yeah.
And then the classic Tom getting overwhelmed in every episode needs to take a break, take a breather, and then someone has to give him a pep talk for him to be like, okay, I'm confident. I'll go back in the room. Every time.
Yes. Oh, I am so... That is a trope that this show is diving into way too often.
Yeah. That one aspect I really don't appreciate. I just want him to get over it by now because it's happened enough times where, like, we get it.
Yes. It's an overwhelming job. We get it. Yes. All right.
Stressful.
Fine. and we also... The other plot element we have kind of up in the air is Seth. We finally say romance may be in the air. And I guess the hard thing is, like, being a political operative in Washington, D.C. is what kind of life do you have, especially if you're working for the president?
I don't know if dating in D.C. is as hard as L.A., but
true.
As soon as Lisa went up to him in that press conference room after he was dodging questions and she was like, oh, I'm interested. I was like, are you playing him or is this, like, real? Yeah.
I don't trust her at all.
I mean, either.
I feel like she's a little too shady. I feel like she was set up to get close to him. I mean, she came on strong. If you want an example of someone coming on strong, it is Lisa Jordan. I believe that's her name.
Yep.
She was like, is it just me or did we have a thing? A thing? You made eye contact and you're like, we need to bring it up. Rather than just being like, oh, hey, I'm Lisa Jordan. Let's talk. She had to be like, I think we had a thing. Like, should we get drinks? I don't know. I don't trust her.
When was the last time you were ever that forward with a man?
Never.
Never?
This morning. No.
Every day.
It didn't end well.
Have you ever been that forward?
The cop didn't appreciate it.
But he got out of that ticket, and that's the important thing. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's to be that brazen. It seems like, all right, well, I guess, you know, you have a lot of confidence about yourself. Like, all right, I got what I got it.
And yeah, but who does that? That's why it's so shady. Have you ever been that forward? I mean, that is a whole new level. Ever, you guys.
I've never been that forward, but I also wonder, like, in the Washington, D.C. circuit, I mean, I figure, is that part of the deal? If you want something, you go get it?
Well, I'm from New York, and I guess if New York is anything like D.C., in terms of pace, you really can't waste any time, so maybe she doesn't want to beat around the bush. That's but the only... I'm being serious. It's not even a joke. I mean, do you really want to, like, do all this fluff and BS or just get right to the point?
I would think that that'd be a great way to live, because it's like, if it's not working, then you just move on to the next thing, and you don't have to worry about, like, weeks on end. Like, is this something? Is this nothing? I don't know.
Like, I don't want to have to swipe through all these people to get to on Tinder. I might as well just use this opportunity.
Yeah, but totally. Do you think that it's going to be a little unfair? fair, it's going to be a really is it going to affect their work relationship? Because, like they said, she is, you know, a journalist and he is the press secretary.
Yeah, I feel like those are certainly two positions that would be in so much conflict with each other.
Yeah, like every time you start a date, you have to go off the record.
Right.
Like every time.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, I can't imagine two tougher positions to be into. That would just make dating very awkward.
Yeah, like go for someone else. So what if you made eye contact and are attracted to each other? There's plenty of fish in the sea.
Well, but if there were, then they, you know, how much dating have they been doing? Poor Seth. It seems like it's been a long, dry spell for him.
Yeah. How do we know?
Well, he said he's been very busy. He didn't even have time to go get drinks. He had to go upstairs to get sparkling water.
How lovely.
How lovely.
So nice. What a great date idea.
But now, if you're dating somebody that's, and I guess if you're, say, you're in Lisa Jordan's shoes, I mean, you're dating he's the press secretary for the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be so understanding? How long would your understanding go for, like, oh, I'm always busy? Would you be able to extend that, like, all right, I get it, you know, so I'll get a quick drink up in your office, or I know that's why we're missing dinner tonight?
I mean, I don't know how long Lisa's gonna deal with it, but I know that Alex got a little frustrated with, you know, people being busy, and, you know, with Tom and hit that whole situation when he was like, oh, well, this is stuff that I have to do, and she got really frustrated. I was a little frustrated with that. So in terms of women being in relationships with men who are very busy, I think they get frustrated pretty easily.
Yeah, and I think she'd be understanding. It's just a matter of how much she's willing to put up with. Like, how what does she want in a relationship? If obviously if his job keeps him that busy and you know that he's going to cancel a bunch, I mean, girl, you're jumping into that pool.
Yeah, if you're like, you know, what are you going to do? When are you going to get time to do stuff? Because, you know, it is tough to kind of make time to find something to do, whether to see a movie or watch a TV show or just, you know, something. I mean, all that political drama. Sometimes you want to just have a good time and have a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're going to be doing that, you know, one great way to have a laugh these days is if you use CISO. You know, basically, if you for a cheap date. You know, $3.99, you could go get a cup of coffee. Now, you could do that at Starbucks or, you know, Coffee Bean, something like that. But, you know, you can also do it for $3.99. You can also get CISO. CISO is an awesome streaming service here. It has a nearly endless supply of top-shelf comedy. Literally. Ooh. Months worth of exclusive originals, face-melting stand-up. And who doesn't want their face melted while you're watching stand-up?
Yeah.
A next day late night and a great catalog of classics. Now, it is the place for comedy. And they're not going to tell you how amazing they are. CISO doesn't have to do that because they have us doing it for you. We're going to tell you how awesome it is because the shows there are spectacular. It's for comedy nerds by comedy nerds. So, in fact, like if you like old-school comedy, especially British comedy, if you want Steve Coogan as Alan Partridge, Knowing Me, Knowing You, oh, man, just for the intro alone, yeah. Yes, Knowing Me, Knowing You, Aha. They just do it's a fantastic show. Watch that just for the intro alone. It's, if you want to see things like chairs floating through space. I know, guys. That was a deep cut. Sorry. Sorry about that. Now, CISO, spelled SEESO, is the new ad-free streaming service bringing you hilarious original series, hand-picked classics, weeks of stand-up specials, and more. It's bingeable comedy anytime, anywhere. Basically, CISO. Now, it has every episode of SNL ever, including new episodes that air the day after they air on network TV. The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon and Late Night with Seth Meyers the day after they air. And they even have classics like 30 Rock, Parks and Rec, and Saved by the Bell. So what? If you want to watch was a diet pill overdose or whatever? Yes, you can see that episode again and again and again. In fact, what Family Guy just did a riff on that, like, the last couple weeks. They kind of did a takeoff of that.
Oh, I didn't see that episode. I thought I saw every episode of Family Guy.
And as I mentioned with British comedies, they also have the original Office of Ricky Gervais, the entire Monty Python catalog. That's not a bad deal. The IT Crowd, and of course, Steve Coogan as Alan Partridge. Now you can discover the next big names in comedy and watch icons before they made it big, like Louis C.K. when he had hair. So who doesn't want to see that?
Right?
Put that on your bucket list, everybody. I want to see it. I love Louis C.K., but I love him when he has hair. This bald Louis C.K., not my guy. Hannibal Buress, Chelsea Peretti, Amy Schumer, Bo Burnham, and so many more. Now, one of the great shows that they have right now is Bajillion Dollar Properties. Basically, it's from the minds behind Reno 911 and Comedy Bang Bang. Bajillion Dollar Properties is my new favorite new show. It stars Paul F. Tompkins, Drew Tarver, and Ryan Gall, as well as a few others. And it's basically like a take on Million Dollar Properties on
HGTV.
Bravo as well.
Yeah.
Yep. So if you want to see that, but just play it into all the comedic moments that you could actually get into, those crazy, wild properties and the people who sell them and buy them, this is the show for you. The critics are calling it addictively ribald. which that's the name of my band name. So check it out. It's I've got a new single dropping just next week. It's one of the best new shows of the TV season. Bajillion Dollar Properties is hilarious, and it's only on CISO. Now, if you're serious about comedy, you've got to try CISO. Stream it anytime, anywhere, on virtually any device. It's ad-free, and for just $3.99 per month, that's less than you paid for that latte or artisan cold brew coffee you're holding right now. And right now, listeners of the Designated Survivor After Show can try CISO free for 2 months when you use the promo code PODCAST1 at checkout. Shows you can't get anywhere else, like critically acclaimed original series like Take My Wife and Harmon Quest to all 40-plus years of SNL, CISO is the only place that offers every episode ever made and the new episodes the day after they air. So just go to CISO.com, that's S-E-E-S-O.com, right now and sign up for 2 months free with the promo code PODCAST1 at checkout. That's CISO.com. Pardon me. We'll take that again. That's CISO.com, promo code PODCAST1.
That sounds awesome. That
yes.
It could be the new Netflix and chill. CISO and chill.
CISO and chill.
All right. Look at that.
I
see a new next week's blog post. Cats, Lipstick LA.
CISO and chill. Check it out.
As we get back into the seriousness, though, of the political landscape, we get Tom heading into the governor's dinner that they're doing. Gets up there, does his little speech trying to unify all the governors, and then all of a sudden shots ring out. Ooh.
Yeah, he was doing a good job, too. It's a shame. That was the first time I saw people like really listening and accepting what he was saying. It seemed like a judge-free zone. It was nice. I liked it.
I thought it was a really good speech. He was on a good track. Rebuild the country, unify the parties, rebuild the House and the Senate, and then it went to...
Yeah, the stupid gunman across the way decides to start shooting up the East Wing.
Like, what are you doing? Like, get a life.
That's right. Come on, don't you have anything better to do?
We're trying to have a dinner.
Can you go see someone chill because we're trying?
We're busy?
So, of course, Mike, who's ahead of the president's Secret Service detail, he's going to go home to hang out with his brother, play, watch a basketball.
Go bowling.
Yeah, or go bowling. That was it. Yes.
Brother-in-law and parents.
Sounds like a fun family time, but comes back when he hears about the shots ringing out, and as they have the shooter cornered in a park, he goes in, and they're able to get the shooter, but Mike takes two. One is stopped by the bulletproof bulletproof breast. You see those pecs of his? Stop a bullet anytime. They bounce right off. But then the other one hits him and cuts one of his arteries, so he's in surgery. But luckily, he makes it through.
Yeah.
I know. Thank God he made it through. That made me very happy because that poor guy, we got to know him a little bit in the beginning, and then he gets shot within like 10 minutes of the episode, not even. So I am happy he made it.
Yeah. I was worried like, oh man, is he already going to be dead already?
No, I know. Another death from this, I mean, whoever this is, this terrorist group that we are unaware of, they're all together. This is another attack brought on by them as far as we know.
Yeah, in fact, this person, they find he's a Chechen national, and right 3 minutes before he started shooting, he pledges allegiance on social media to Nassar. So they're figuring, like, maybe having him alive is not the best idea because there's going to all these other people wanting to lend their support to Nassar, saying, all right, I'll take up your cause if you're behind this. I'm getting on the bandwagon.
Great.
In fact, even the president is talking about that in the command center, and there's a big talk about wanting to do a more intensive interrogation. Get him off U.S. soil, take him to a black site. You can really start to do some advanced interrogation techniques and see if it'll open up. And there's
That's
that
terrifying.
Big debate for a moment to see how reliable is that sort of intel you get from that.
Oof. Well, I do like the way they handle it. They definitely killed it, Hannah and Jason, in the interrogation room with him. They're so good. They know how to, like, what, like, buttons to push.
I was actually kind of glad that that Atwood kind of spoke up and was like, we want him. And then I was glad that Tom gave them 24 hours. I didn't think 24 hours was fair. Like, what's the rush, you know? He's about to be locked in a hole at Quantico. So, like, what is the big rush? But clearly it worked. I did like their kind of teamwork. I didn't know if they were playing bad cop, good cop. I feel like Jason was being good cop and Hannah was being, like, this really intense, like, bad cop. She was, like, all in his face about it. But yeah, they got the information that they needed out of him.
Yeah, what I thought is because the episode's called The Interrogation. It wasn't until we find out that when Tom gets all the governors back, they want to essentially interrogate him to find out why should we let you be our president.
That was
so they're
stressful.
Both getting interrogated this show.
Oh my gosh, what a fitting name for the episode. I'm so sick of people questioning Tom like that and ganging up on him. It's just frustrating. Like, he has the job right now. just because you make it more difficult for him. Well, here's the thing. I can say just because you make it more difficult for him doesn't mean he's just going to stop being the president. As he says, well, maybe I just shouldn't be the president, walks out of the room. But, like, it's getting frustrating with all of these people. It just doesn't stop.
I'm glad that you brought it up because it's like, what's the point of having a democratic process? Democratic process. I'm still saying it wrong. If he was a designated survivor, clearly he was the one to survive. Nobody actually expected this to happen, but it did. And this is what we have to deal with. What's the point in having this policy if we're not going to abide by it?
Very true. Like, if everybody can just call into question, like, we don't like the person that was chosen as designated survivor, then, you know, we don't have to follow him, right? If we don't like him, or he may not have had a job the day after. Well, it's at that moment, he still had the job, and he is a designated survivor. So you're right, Timothy. It's like, that's processes put in place, so we have to at least respect the process if we're still trying to maintain some semblance of our country.
Yeah,
totally. And, like, Tom also needs to respect the process, because the way... And here's the thing. I get it. I have anxiety when you're like... Man, they all don't want me to be president. The president didn't even want me to be president. He just did this as a throwaway.
Yeah. He didn't want to be HUD secretary.
So I just think he needs to understand everything happens for a reason. He was chosen to be a designated survivor for a reason. And he needs to start acting like it without everyone else having to give him pep talks all the time. I feel like we say this every episode. Mm-hmm. I get that it takes time. I mean... if I all of a sudden was president, I don't think I would know what to do either. I think I would question myself, but this is why I'm not the designated survivor and I'm not president.
Well, this is another reason why I think that Aaron is kind of a little suspicious right now, because they keep giving him like these redeeming qualities, which I think are a little awkward. Like, he's the one who's always giving the president these pep talks. And just like in this episode, he gave the president the pep talk and Tom was like, thank you so much, Aaron. And then he went out there and killed it. But I don't know. And then I just don't trust Aaron, you guys.
I know.
I'd agree. And, you know, it's like, even though it may be true to the life, what you were saying, Renee, is that, you know, he may be feeling nervous every single week. It's like, that's great. It might be in real life. You may be nervous. But as a TV show, I think I'm tired of it by episode 6 to see that same scene happen again and again and again.
Yeah. It's so predictable. Like, when he left the room, none of us were like, well, that's all. Guess he's going to go back home. That's the end. No, we're all like, okay, time for him to walk it off, take a breather, and then have someone... give him that pep talk to get him back in the room. Like, everyone has seen that coming over and over again. So I think that one of that, just like that storyline with him, I'm sick of. I wish they would drop that. But I do think that they're going to stop it soon. I think they're just keep wanting us to be reminded as an audience that, like, this is tough. People don't just like you once you become the president. They're going to be annoyed. Why are you the president? You were this designated survivor. You weren't even supposed to be working this position anymore to be the designated survivor. So we're supposed to understand just, I guess, how hard it is to get everyone on your side.
Now, it was interesting during the governors, as they're all kind of talking to him, there is one governor that knows Tom from before he was president, when he was just part of HUD, that speaks up for him. So, I don't know, would you wanted to see in that scene at least a few more governors having some association with Tom to at least speak up? Because I felt like we had the one lone voice of the governor's like, oh, I know Tom. He's a great guy. He's done this. And then everybody else seemed to be like, nah, why should we believe you? I don't know. Why? Prove to us.
Well, first of all, his name was Governor Mnuchin, and I enjoy that name very much. But I kind of respect the guy for actually standing up in front of all those people and taking his side and saying, kind of reasoning with Tom, being like, you know, Tom, I know you personally and I like you, but it's kind of time to prove to all these people. But then Governor Nichols just, once again, really intense and was like, well, these are all the questions that I'm going to ask you, and this is what we have to do in order to get you on our side. And I was like, girl, let him breathe. Like,
can
everybody just introduce themselves really quick? So this could be like more of a friendly, but
name
I guess
games.
It's TV, so I mean, we don't have much time, but... Jeez.
Now, the other issue that's in play, too, is the Syrian refugees. Governor Rivera down in Miami was going to, supposedly before all the shooting happened, was going to let them off. But now that the shooting's happening, everything's in a crisis. All of his constituents there don't want them, those Syrian refugees, off the plane. So he wants to deny them access.
Yeah, because they don't know who to blame. So they want to discriminate and kind of think everyone's an enemy because they're acting out of fear, which is not what we should do because these people are innocent. So it was ridiculous. And watching from just this being a TV show and being like, well, what are you doing? And watching how
relevant it is.
Yeah, how mm-hmm. relevant it is, truly. And just seeing, I guess, the two positions and seeing where they're both coming from. But, like, watching it, you're like, you cannot just pinpoint, well, there might be an enemy on there. Yes, but there might be an enemy in your workplace. It doesn't matter where they're from. There's bad people everywhere. So to just be like, well, we're just going to not let anyone in is absurd.
Now, and it was frustrating to hear nobody say, like, why are we just all of a sudden abandoning all the principles that, you know, that we founded this country on, that we're supposed to be open to all.
Yeah.
And in this moment, and certainly no tensions are high, but at a moment like this, I feel like you still have to stick to the principles that made this country what it is.
Totally.
I mean, just to play devil's advocate, I can understand where they're coming from. The whole entire Capitol, you guys, and just imagine it for a second. The entire Capitol, everything that our government is built on was just blown up. So we are in this very vulnerable state, and I'm actually interested in knowing why the writers or the show in general hasn't shown more of the public. They did it mm-hmm. on the yeah. first episode, or was it the second episode, when he went to the bombing site and they saw how frustrated the people were there and how vulnerable and on edge they were. But they haven't gone back to that, and I really want them to show what the public is thinking in this moment, because I'm sure they're scared, and I can understand why the governors would have this position. And they also said it wasn't going to be permanent, it would only be temporary. So knowing all of that, I could understand why Tom made this decision that he did. And then he sent them to Canada, which isn't bad. Canada's
no,
not
as
bad.
He said, yeah, I sent him back. Yeah, I
sent him
back
to Pakistan.
Yeah, exactly.
I might go to Canada.
You know, I was actually really, I was proud of Tom for kind of, you know, delegating the responsibilities and finding an alternative or a back door to what they wanted to kind of please everybody.
Because there was one episode several episodes ago when you see everything that's happening in Michigan with Governor Royce. And the one thing that was frustrating about that is that you only saw just like the negative sides of that. I got to imagine that not everybody in that state was behind what Governor Royce was doing. You never saw anybody saying, why are we doing this? Yeah, I felt like I was missing that human element of the people in Michigan like speaking up like, no, we don't want this either.
I totally agree with both of you, but now I just... Again, to play devil's advocate on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, your turn.
I feel like we have so many shows in just real life to get this point of view. Like, there's going to be opposing views and opinions on all of these matters. And we know that. We know that, like, if the Capitol building were to blow up and our government as we knew it is gone, we would all be in panic. And there would be people like, well, screw it. There'd be people like, we need to close up everything and not let anyone in. There would be all different perspectives. But I think this show is so great because it only focuses on what's happening like within the government. And because there's so much going on, that's why they don't bother to show any more like what's happening just out and about in the real world. Because like, I mean, even we know we hate like the Leo storyline, and that's such a small bit. But if they added so much more and just everyone's perspective what's just going on around the country with just the people of the country, I feel like it would almost be too much.
No, I certainly can agree with what you're saying there, Renee. I think maybe the frustrating thing about the show to me is that it seems like it's everybody is all negative and it's against Tom. Like Tom is like the lone, he's like yeah. designated survivor of our original principles of the country. And I feel like he's the one that's fighting back everything. And mm-hmm. I feel like that gets a little frustrating too, where he seems like he's the lone voice in the crowd to like, hey, we need to be a little rational in this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I can agree with you on that then.
Him
yeah.
and Emily. I feel like Emily always has
very
his back.
True. Yes.
Yeah. Emily's great.
Because even Alex, Emily. His wife, is now on like this whole I'm frustrated with you kick.
Which I know you've been talking about for a while, you thought was going to happen.
I knew this would happen. I was waiting for it. Trouble in paradise. You guys, this job is super stressful. I'm like, when is it going to start affecting their relationship? And it's just begun. This is the first fight. So, of course, later on in the night, they're cool. I'm telling you, this is not the only fight they're going to have. And it's only going to get worse.
Can we also talk about that encyclopedia that she was reading while she was sitting in that room?
Yes.
It was like this old, like, 16th century encyclopedia. And she's just flipping the pages. And I was like, she is playing the I'm not mad, I'm just quiet phase. And she's like...
The passive aggressive, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. Right. It's fine. He's like, we have a dinner tonight. Good for you.
Yep.
And then he goes... And then I love that he's like, okay, I'll just tell them you're not feeling well. And then she smiles. She's like, no, I'll go. you were just ignoring him completely. That was a weird scene for me.
I do like the interaction between Alex and Aaron when he comes up and says, like, hey, maybe you should dial back on the Syrian refugees with the governors because Tom's got a lot on his plate with them right now. And she says, you know, as a wife of 17 years and an immigration lawyer for 22, I'm gonna counsel Tom and leave the political fallout to you, Aaron. You can take care of that.
I loved that. I loved how she just stood up to him. She's like, you're not going to tell me to be quiet and not talk to my husband, but thanks.
Not only did I love it because she stood up to him, but I love that they're doing a little bit of backstory on Alex. Like, I always forget that she was a lawyer. And not only was she a lawyer, but she was an immigration attorney, which was so relevant in this episode because of these Syrian refugees. So I could understand why she was frustrated with Tom because her heart was in it. And I'm sure at the same time, she probably is like restless. She has probably nothing to do except for be guarded by Secret Service all day and hear about the Capitol bombing.
Yeah.
So I'm sure she saw this and was like, as an opportunity, like, oh, this is something I can do. And then it blew up in her face. But she's going to have to get used to it.
No, and I guess it's a hard thing because I think everybody that's involved in some sort of cause or some sort of issue, it's the most important thing for them. And not realizing there may be a bigger picture that you're unaware of that that could be just a tiny part of a much larger picture. And you're like, oh, all right, so I didn't get this thing because all this other stuff needed something else to happen instead.
Yeah.
Frustrating to, I think it's difficult to hear, is that one small piece, you're like, but still, I like my piece, though. Can my piece be in this, too? Yeah. Can we just do something?
Yeah.
But I did like, though, at least Alex acknowledged that Aaron's like, I know that's your job to tell me to do this, but I'm going to tell you why I'm not going to do it, and we're just going to keep going on about our day.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Take care, Aaron. Bye-bye. Have
a good day. Bye-bye.
We've got the other thing we were talking about, the interrogation scene about Hannah and Atwell. We finally get Nassar to kind of fess up.
I actually kind of wanted to bring it back to Nasir because Nassar or Nasir, I'm sorry, is it?
Najid Nassar.
Got it. They captured him alive, and I just kind of wanted to bring it up to you guys of Osama bin Laden, because that's really the only reference that I have of a main attack on our United States soil in reality. Do we wish that we had captured Osama bin Laden alive?
Okay, here's the thing. So in the previous couple episodes ago, we were learning just the process of what it goes into, like, chasing after a terrorist. And they're like, bring him alive if possible. So what I'm assuming happened when we went after Osama is that they said, like, the same. If you can, bring him alive. But if it comes down to losing him or having to not being able to bring him back alive or just killing him, I mean, they're probably going to go with killing him, the latter, so it'd end.
Yeah, I mean, because it's interesting because I feel like we know more than the American public would know at this time. They're only knowing that he is the face responsible for this bombing. So, of course, they'd want that. But no, we knowing that, or, well, at least there's some questions about all that intel, and that there's a better way to find out how the accuracy of his involvement is to keep him alive if possible. I could see that. So, the Osama bin Laden, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the inner workings of their questions.
Wasn't there.
Don't you know everything, Frank? Come on. Where's you in the situation room?
President Obama was going to call me. I was like, I'm busy right now, guys.
Oh, it's Najid. I thought it was Najid. It's Majid?
Majid.
Okay.
Okay.
I spelled Najid.
Oh, thank you, Ivan Soto.
Thanks, Chad, for keeping Renee on point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Figuring out those typos. Joyful Kia says, I hope Tom does not lose his soul.
No, we figure out that by the end of this, he does come back and he goes through, answers the questions as best he can to the governors. Basically he does his little speech after Aaron gives him his pep talk and says, he thinks he's the best chance that this country has and he loves his country, but he needs to have them work together. And says, hey, governors, we can. If you're either with me or I resign and we find somebody else.
And I also love that they're giving Tom these little kind of senses of humor moments, like in the beginning when he was about to go into the ball with all the governors, and she was like, well, you can't have it at Golden Corral. And he's like, oh, I love Golden Corral.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I love Golden Corral, too.
They even made a shout-out to this where she, after he tells Alex that she's breathtaking, she's like, oh, you got a haircut. And
contacts.
He goes with contacts. Yeah. So I wonder if that's, like, just their excuse to, like, this is why Tom's no longer wearing glasses in the show, guys, because he's got contacts now all the time.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that. I thought it was a cute little flirty moment between them. But that's a good point.
She did look good in that dress. And that little, like, little drape thing. Oh,
whatever
that was.
They're called.
something like what I have on.
Something like a scarf-ish. Or
I don't want to say a shawl, but...
It's not a shawl, because it was like, it was not as big. I have a shawl, if that
She's always talking about that shawl, guys.
I love shawls. They're like blankets, but fashionable. I thought Emily looked hot. Emily looked so good.
Yeah, I was going to say Emily was wearing black like we were, so she got the memo to wear black today.
All right, just Adson, for 1 second, who do you think is going to hook up first? Seth and the reporter, or... Emily and Aaron.
Seth and the reporter.
No, Emily and Aaron.
Seth and the reporter.
No, Emily and Aaron.
No, because I'm telling you, the Emily and Aaron is a slower burn. They're keeping up the sexual tension. They're going to tease each other back and forth, but that's going to be a bit. Whereas I don't think this storyline with Lisa Jordan is going to last that long. I think we're going to find out that she's manipulating him and trying to get a story, whatever. And so they're going to sleep together and then... whatever ramifications happen from that, we'll see. But I definitely see.
But that's why I think it's going to be Aaron and Emily, because I feel like Seth is going to see through that whole Lisa Jordan, I'm into you, ooh, but I'm not really into you thing. So he's going to cut it short. And then Emily and Aaron are going to hook up. What do you think?
That's a good prediction.
I would agree with you, Timothy, because it felt like everybody knew, like, I mean, Seth, it says that Aaron's like, yeah, this is the worst idea to be dating somebody she's a member of the press. And Aaron's like, who else are you going to date? But so I feel like Seth knows going in that this is a bad idea. So he wouldn't divulge anything. If things started getting too conflict of interest, he would step aside.
Yeah.
I would think, because if they don't and he does do something, I'm going to feel like, oh, guys, why did you tell this storyline? You already told us that he was smart enough to know that this could be a possibility.
Yeah.
And then it happens, like, great.
And on top of that, Seth seems a little asexual to me. like visualizing him having sex with anybody on this show is just a little weird. Whereas Aaron, on the other hand...
Aaron seems like a player.
Yes, but players have a lot of sex, so...
Well, yeah. Just saying. Yeah. True.
I know firsthand from the cop this morning.
That's right. There you go. In fact, Timothy's inspired a great thing. And folks, if you want to just list in the chat, like, you know, just in order right there, who do you think has the most action in this series right there?
Yeah, actually, chat, predict who you think is going to get together first. Okay, Yvonne's saying Seth and the reporter, no doubt. And then they said Aaron and Emily, long-term relationship, the slower burn. It takes longer. And that's why... I feel like if it was not going to be a long-term relationship or they weren't going to make it a thing, they would have hooked up by now.
No. I'm sorry. Ivan Soto, Aaron and Emily's a long-term relationship. No. That just needs to be a hit it and quit it moment, because Emily could do so much better. That's all I'm saying.
Hit it and quit it.
No.
So at least with the interrogation, Hannah finally gets what they wanted. Hannah and Atwood figure out that, yep, Nassara wasn't behind it, and he gives them the name of Catalan. Mm-hmm.
Catalan.
Now, I feel like this is where Atwood made the rookie mistake, is he went back to the office and then typed that name into the database.
Oh, and see, along with like five other spellings of a name,
yes,
too.
I'm like, no. You don't do that.
This was the number one issue for me. How about when you ask what the name is, how about say, Anna, what did they look like? How about give me a description so I have more to go off of? But no, let's just get the first name and go.
Well, yeah? I guess he thought that they just got the first name. They were going to go back into the database. I don't think they actually anticipated that something as big as this, some terror organization that could be as big as this to destroy our whole entire capital, there would be no record on.
So, true.
Yeah, but get the description to be safe. You finally have him where you want him. You're just going to get a first name?
But I also think if you have McLeish involved, so certainly there's people in the U.S. government in some sort of amount involved with this. So the last thing you should be doing is letting them know that you have some inside information.
Yeah.
So, man, why did you type that into the database?
I felt the same way. Yeah, again, description. Should have just gotten the description.
Yes, that would have been a bigger help, because once they type it in and they don't find any of the records, Hannah says maybe it's above your clearance, and I'm sure that tipped off anybody that was watching. It's tripped off something, because by the end of the episode, Nassara's dead. Yeah, so great job, guys.
Great job, come on, Atwood. Hannah, you're the Jason. Good job.
You're director of the FBI, and this is what you do. Get it together. And then the other bit there is that Governor Nichols, Governor Rivera, they come up after Tom does his big speech to the governors and say, hey, you know, if you decide to suspend immigration, as we've been talking about there, we'll get the majority of the governors behind you so you can get your Senate nominees in place and you can start getting your Congress in action. So Tom kind of learns the art of the compromise. So they're making those tough calls. Well, there's no right decision for this, but he's got to just give a little to get a little. And Alex, of course, not thrilled about that. But
yeah, clearly not thrilled about that.
No.
So how do you feel like, I know we've been talking about, is Tom going to be able to kind of keep his integrity as he goes to the White House? Or is he going to be compromised and kind of become a shell of the person that he was here at the beginning of the series? What do you think? We've seen his first kind of compromise.
I think he's learning how politics work. And so perhaps to Emily and Alex and a few other people that don't understand. Like, I think Aaron will get it, but I think Emily for sure and Alex will be like, you're changing. Just as Emily did like four episodes ago, and she's like, he's already changing. When he made like one decision. Anyways, my point is, I do think there's a lot, as Alex said, a lot of impossible decisions to make, but I don't think a lot of people will be understanding of that. But I don't think that will make Tom change as a person.
Yeah, I think going into this, I feel like Tom was a little bit naive. Being HUD secretary, you're still in the world of DC. You still are surrounded by politics. So I would have assumed that he would have known how politics works before even coming into this position, not that he wanted it, but kind of being familiar with, hey, you have to give a little to get a little. You have to compromise a little here. You have to sell your soul a little bit here. Like, that's what politics is. Sorry, Tom, but buck up.
Yeah, and I feel like Alex is, when she's all disappointed, it's like, I'm not angry at my president. I'm disappointed in my husband. I'm like, come.
Yeah, right, Alex? Like,
lay down, Timothy.
Me and Frank looked at each other, and I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, what did you just say? Who wrote this? I was like, so bad. I was like, you couldn't have thought about any other way to say that. I mean, just storm out, just slap him, something. I don't know. Pants him, do something. Just don't say that line.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't like that line either.
Oh, man. So that is how we bring the end of this episode of Designated Survivor. But we've got a couple minutes here to do some predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
All right. Timothy, since you're joining us new this evening, let's go. Have you go first on your predictions.
Okay, well, since we've already predicted our long-term relationships, hit it and quit it relationships, I'm going to say that, you know, I've said this from the beginning, I think that Jason is part of Catalan. And this episode only further proves my point, because there was no record of him in the FBI database. So maybe Jason swiped it. Or, like, erased it before they got to it. Mm. So I think that he's involved. And I think that Alex isn't going to be able to handle the pressure of Tom being president. I think there's going to be a lot of friction in that. Those are my predictions.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the Alex and Tom marriage problems. And I think they're just going to get worse and it's going to grow more tense. I'm also wondering just... question for you guys. So in this episode, we did hear Alex refer to going to check on the kids, but we didn't see them this episode. Do you think that's going to be a thing that they're like, the kids aren't working, let's just have them there but not really have them in the show?
I was thinking about that same thing, and I was going to mention that if you hadn't, and I love that. Please.
Yeah, me too.
Don't need to see him.
Fine by me. It's not really an important part of the show, I guess, aside from, unfortunately, Leo now has a bigger storyline because he could be this Alex's son with the guy that's in prison, whatever.
Yeah, but we don't need to see Leo for that.
But we don't need to see him. Let's just hear his name. It's enough. I'm good. And I stick with, I think it's an inside job. And I think the person like behind her or someone very involved is someone that we know very well. And I'm not going to.
Like Jason Atwater.
Like possibly Jason, possibly. I would even go as far as saying like the wife, Alex. It could really be anyone.
Alex?
Right.
I don't know the first episode.
Okay.
I'm just saying, depending on where the show is going, I think it's someone very close to home. I think the storyline will tie together more, but I think it's someone like that we know very well.
Like Leo.
Okay.
He's mad about his daddy.
That's right. The less Leo, the better. So, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of the Designated Survivor After Show. But as always, like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Thanks to everybody for hopping in the chat and sharing your thoughts about the series and this episode in specific. If you want to continue the conversation with us even after the show is over, Renee, where can they find you?
Hey guys, I'm Renee Ariel. You can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter at Renee Ariel, and check out my blog, CatsLipstickLA.com, and read my new article, Why I'm Single.
Even I'm going to check out that blog.
Yay!
Hey guys, I'm Timothy Mike. You can reach me on Instagram and Twitter at I am Timothy Mike.
And you can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie. Maybe Renee is it Charles? I don't know. Is that the reason why you're still single?
I can't tell you. You have to read the blog.
Got it. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week with another new episode of Designated Survivor right here on AfterBuzz TV.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.